huge news, years in the making, my brand new book that my publishers refuse to publish, Money Matrix. Beat the money system and build generational wealth. Understand the three main ways that the banks productize you and make money from you. You'll be able to turn that system against itself, build generational wealth and multiple streams of recurring income. It's all at moneymatrix.cash. And if you're quick, the first few hundred registrants and buyers will receive many special bonuses from me. The brand new Moneymaker Summit 3-day special event. Meet me at a champagne reception. Meet me at a multi-millionaire networking dinner. Go now, moneymatrix.cash. This is huge.
The Money Podcast by best-selling author of Money, Rob Moore, dives into how to make, manage, and master money. How to know more, make more, and give more. How to save, invest, and raise money. The Money Podcast is for anyone who wants to make more money in a job, profession, or passion. For money masters and money disasters. They say money doesn't make you happy. Rob says it does.
Hi, it's Rob Moore here, and I thought I'd share with you on this live, and it's also going to be on my money podcast. It does what it says on the tin. It's called Money. It's about money. Funny about money. I met a billionaire yesterday. I think he's probably the sixth billionaire we've had on my podcast, The Disruptive Entrepreneur, which probably makes him about the eighth billionaire that I've met or I know. And a lot of people assume things about people with vast amounts of wealth. And I'm not just talking about, you know, people who are more sort of socialist or left, but just assumptions that people make. And I don't think they really know the deal until they've actually met the people. And the chap is called Jim McCall. And I believe, according to my research, though you may want to double check this, at one point, he has been the richest man in Scotland. He's certainly on the Sunday Times rich list for Scotland, you know, right up there in the top 10 or whatever. And when I first shook his hand, I thought, what a warm, unassuming man. And I don't know, there's these people, that was squeaky. There's these people out there. They reckon they know what rich people are all about, you know, and they're greedy and they're power hungry and they're ego driven and they screw people over and they create monopolies. I have never met one billionaire like that. Now, maybe I'm getting lucky and meeting all the humble ones, or maybe there's some attraction thing going on, but I've not met one of them. And what I liked about Jim was his answers were very simple and very succinct. And so simple, they almost made you double take that you're like, oh, so simple, but I hadn't really thought of it like that. I'm going to give you one example right now, right off the bat. So in my podcast, The Disruptive Entrepreneur, I always ask at the end a set of disruptive questions. It's like five that we have that are always the same. And the first one is, what's the best advice you ever received? And he sat and he paused and he thought about this for a good 10 seconds. And he said, the best business to be in is the business you're already in. The best business to be in is the best business you're already in. Now, I knew exactly what he meant when he said that. But I think some people are going to take some time to process that. But I have people every day going, oh, someone's doing amazing at service accommodation over there. Or look at that influencer on social media. Or they've got a really amazing podcast. Or, oh, look at those guys doing deal packaging or HMOs or rent to rent. And they're looking at all the strategies that everyone else is doing. And they've been doing theirs a year or two or three. And they're finally just getting to that point where things are going to turn around and then they're going to get results. You know, you've planted the seed, you've grown the roots, the shoots are showing, and then they change and do something else. And they change before they're able to grow the tree and bear the fruits. And we all know, because we all do this, don't we? The grass is greener on the other side. It's easier for you. It's better for you. You're making more money than me. When in reality, every business model has its challenges. But when you start something new, now look, I help a lot of people start new businesses. So people are often attracted to me business-wise when they want to start a business, a startup or a scale-up. So if you want to have that one life change or that career change, of course, you've got to change. So it's not like never changing. But for those that are changing every year or 2 or 3 years, you're not getting any momentum. You're not building velocity. You're not enabling compounding to kick in. I got a really interesting statistic today. So we've had a sales member, a business development manager in our in my company, Progressive. She's been with us, I think, 8 years. And my MD today said, this lady who's been with us 8 years, she's got 11,000 clients. 11,000 clients. Now, let's say she was thinking of getting a new job because a startup progressing property came along and said, hey, come and work for us. We'll give you everything. And tried to poach her. If she left, she starts with 0 clients. And she's got 11,000 clients. Wow. So surely she's made. She's made for life. But if she's going through troubles or disruptions or whatever, then the best business to be in is the best business you're already in. Often, of course, not always, and not if you need to start or there's been a massive disruption in your industry or you just know it's right for your vision, your health, your wealth, that you need to change a business model. But I've been in the business that I'm in now 14 years. And that's why things are going well. Still have challenges, by the way. And sometimes I think, I should have done things quicker. But, you know, it takes time to grow a tree. So Scott Harris put, with respect, Rob, I left a situation where the market was shrinking. Marketing costs 4x, 4 times in 6 years with consequent downward pressure on pricing. Yeah, I think, Scott, you probably just messaged that as I was making the caveat that there's nothing wrong with changing when you need to change. You just don't want to change every 2, 3, 5, 10, or 20 years. You want to change once every 20 years. Yeah, cool. And I think he probably said often, because nothing is ever always or never. All right, cool. So I'm going to give you a few more tips from the conversation with Jim McCall. At one point, I believe the richest man in Scotland, a billionaire. All right, so shoulders aching, knackered here at the gym. All right, so other tips from this billionaire. So the two things he said are if you're going into a company to look to turn it around, the two main areas he reckons you can turn it around are, one, increasing the prices. And he said it sounds so obvious, but when they're in the company, they can't see it. So could you increase your prices? Two, you do a profit and loss on every product or every department and you cut out the loss-making ones. And again, that sounds so obvious, but when you've run your own company, you're myopic, you can't see, I couldn't get rid of that product. I couldn't lose those people. I couldn't, you know, because you're just in it and you've got all these objections and, you know, maybe cognitive biases. So I thought they were very interesting. I think some of the prices on my programs aren't high enough. Now, of course, you're probably not going to think that if you're one of my customers, clients. But yeah, I think that there's definitely some of my courses I could put up. I always like to test when you put them up that you don't get a dramatic drop in conversion. And if I look at all the programs we run, I used to run a profit and loss on all of them and we don't so much anymore. So I need to bring that back out. And also, are they all the same profitability? No way. Are there a couple maybe that it wouldn't really harm my company and might free some resource if we didn't run them anymore? Possibly. So I'll go and look at that. The next thing is he has bought something like 87 companies, Jim McCall. That's a lot of companies. Their group turnover is more than 1 billion right now. That's some turnover. And that's Scotland. And he said, how I've bought companies over the years, it's quite simple. I just call up competitors or companies I like or people I might want to collaborate with, wherever they are in the world. And I say to them, hey, look, I'm in the area around these times, which He isn't. He books his flight after he's called them. And, hey, could I come in and could we have a chat? And he says that most people say yes, even when he was smaller and, you know, not as well known as he is now. And he'd just go and he said he would be very non-threatening, i.e. he would just not say, I want to buy your company or, you know, come with any bravado or ego. And he would just build a relationship. And he says often a lot of the companies he bought competitors or companies that were huge that he didn't really have the right to buy. Even when people said, I'm never selling to you, I'm never selling to you. This was a tip he said. He said, when they say, the only way I'd sell to you, that means they'll sell. And because they think they won't, because they always say they never will. But if they say, the only way I'll sell to you is if, and so then he says, yeah, all right, I'll do that. And then he ends up buying them. And I thought that was quite a sweet little thing. But what really struck me was that non-threatening way of meeting and building relationships with people and being very general and saying, hey, look, I'm looking for collaborations. This, how can we help each other? What's the mutual benefit and interest? And then, of course, he's always then in the game, isn't he? Because if they want to sell in a year or two or three, they don't feel threatened by him. And of course, they've got the relationship and they're much more likely to do it. And we discussed at quite lengths of time, Jim and I, the fact that most people now are hiding behind their phone, emailing, WhatsApping, messaging, private messaging. And maybe we've lost the art of going and meeting people and sitting with them face to face and having a 2 or a 3 hour meeting and actually really building a relationship and looking in the whites of the eyes. And that's something I really believe more in speaking or meeting than I do texting or messaging. And when I do a lot of my podcasts, I go and see them. We left at 6 a.m. and we got back at 10 p.m. and we drove to Scotland and we spent a couple of hours with Jim and we interviewed him and we drove back. And that was far better than doing it on Skype. Now, sometimes I'll do the interviews on Skype because they're in America. But, you know, when there's that bit of a lag and a delay on the audio, it's a bit shit and the rapport's not there and you're sort of talking over each other and you can't really see them. And then the internet lags and it cuts in and out and it's awkward. It's weird. Whereas when you sat, you know, with them face to face in a meeting room or in a restaurant, you're not getting interrupted. You're there. You can build really good rapport. And I just don't think we do that enough. And I've endeavored over the last couple of years, I must admit, 2-3 years ago, I just did everything on my phone and I hid behind it. And I say this with humility, but I'm actually pretty good at networking and I'm pretty good at building relationships with people. I've done that really well. But I convinced myself 2 or 3 years ago I wasn't really that confident with people. I wasn't really that social because everything was message, 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 message. And I thought, you know what? I don't want to become that. I don't know. I don't want to lose my soul. I don't want to lose that ability to connect with people. And actually, you know, we all know business is relationships. And I know it's so cliche, but it really is. So I get in the car and I go see them all. I have a driver, so I am, because that means I can get work done in the back of the car and you can leverage your time. But yeah, I go out on the road a lot more now and I like going out on the road. I get shitloads done in the car because no one is interrupting me. So that's a massive win. And then, of course, you get to build that relationship. Now I've built some really good friendships with people I've interviewed on my podcast. And I mean, really good friendships. And that wouldn't have happened had I not met them face to face. So I think let's be the antithesis, the opposite of social media, which is face to phone. Or, you know, you know, when people are like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And they're on their phone just going, yeah, and pretending to listen. It's like, I know I've done that in the past. I try not to do that anymore because it's horrible for connections and relationships. You don't feel important and people need to feel important. And if you want to buy or sell a company or raise some JV finance or sell your products or services, your clients or your lenders or your partners or your investors, they need to feel important. And they're not going to feel important if they're just sent a carte blanche, you know, like copy paste message, or you're not connecting with them on that human level. Now, I learned a lot more and there was a lot more in this conversation with Jim, the billionaire, but I don't want to ruin it all. because the podcast is coming out in a few weeks' time. What else could I tell you? Ah, this was interesting. I said to him, are you money motivated? And he went, well, yeah, of course. I'm money motivated. Because, you know, money is the measure of the results and the progress. And money buys you the nice house and money buys you the nice car. And the nice house and the nice car are a good motivator to grow your business. Because if you want a nice house and a nice car, you've got to make the money to make the nice house and the nice car. And how do you make the money? You make the money by growing the business. He said, actually, this was a really good story. And I won't tell you the whole story because I'll let you listen to it on the podcast. But basically, he had this dream home that he wanted to get and it was way out of his league. And his wife was like, we can't afford it. But instead of saying, look, I can't afford it, I'll look at it, you know, in 10 years or something, he went back to one of the companies that he was helping. So he's he calls himself a company doctor. So he'd go into companies and fix them and turn them around. And what he'd do is small fee, high upside. And he went back to this company where they'd set a budget for the year. And you never change budgets. Once they're done, they're done, this according to Jim. And he said, I sat the team down and I said, look, we're playing too small here. And I know you never change budgets, but we've got to increase this budget because we're playing too small. I think we could be so much bigger. And he tripled the budget, i.e. tripled the targets. And the reason he did it is because he wanted to fund the house. So they hit the targets and he made enough money to fund the house. And, you know, that's what money gives you. Money gives you a goal, a target, a drive to grow your business. And by growing your business, you reach more people. By reaching more people, you serve more people. There's a lot of people out there, oh, I'm not very motivated by money or money isn't important. And, you know, I do think there are some billionaires out there who have done really well and they've made loads of money. And they're like, oh, well, money isn't important. It's never about the money. But I'm not sure I believe that. I am not sure I believe that. Because even if money, you know, Warren Buffett says money is the measure of keeping score. So he's motivated by the score. And the score is money. So he's motivated by money. And nearly every business owner will tell you that profit is king. You know, a turnover is vanity. Profit is sanity. Profit is money. So if you're motivated by profit, you're motivated by money. And there's nothing wrong with being motivated by money. As long as you don't let it control you. It's great to be a master of money, but it's terrible to be a slave to money. John has just asked here, Rob, how money motivated are you and why is it frowned upon? I'm motivated by the following things, John. One is growth. I'm really motivated by growth, progress. That's actually my highest life value. I'm way more motivated by growth and progress than I am money. But money tends to come from growth and progress, though not always, because sometimes you get growth and progress through challenge and you don't get money, but you get growth and progress, a lot of growth. So I'm motivated by that the most, John. So your question is, how motivated am I by money? I'd say I'm relatively motivated by money. I love making money. I love saving money. I love investing money. I love spending money. I love the great things you can do in your life with money. I love giving money away to my foundation and different charities. I love having the choice of, you know, doing what you want when you want. McQueen's just brought out a lovely new jacket. It is beautiful. I love the fact that I can afford that. I like to have good equipment so I can do good work, like the latest phone, which is, you know, have you noticed the screen on this phone is better than my last one? So, you know, you can afford the latest. Got cramp in my foot, bollocks. Ah! Shit. Ah! Sorry if you're listening to the podcast. This is not making for great listening. Major cramp in my foot. So, yeah, good equipment for your art. I think being motivated by money is frowned upon because I think people perceive if you're motivated by money, you're motivated by greed and power. But a lot of people who are motivated by money are not motivated by greed and power. And greed and power and money are mutually exclusive. They are not necessarily the same things. And you can be greedy when you're skint and you can be greedy when you're rich. And you can be power hungry when you're skint and you can be power hungry when you're rich. You know, like when people say, oh, money doesn't make you happy. Well, you can be rich and happy, rich and unhappy, poor and happy, and poor and unhappy. You can be all variables. So, I like money and I'm motivated by money. And I like to be, I like to master money, but not be its slave. And I don't need billions. And, you know, you may have heard me in my mid-20s talk about wanting to be a millionaire or whatever. And okay, it's easy for me to say that now I've achieved that status. It was an anniversary nearly 10 years ago when I became a millionaire. But I, you never hear me talking about, oh yeah, I want to be a billionaire. I want to be a 100 millionaire, or I want to be a, you know, whatever. Because I don't think anyone cares if you want to be a millionaire. So I think people think if you're motivated by money, you're greedy, you're powerful, and you're exploiting others. And I think if you go around saying, yeah, I want to be a millionaire, I want to be a millionaire, my goal is to be a millionaire by 25, 35, 45. Nothing wrong with that goal, but people don't give a shit about that. No one is glad to hear you say, yeah, I want you to be a millionaire, unless they're getting some of it, in which case, yeah, go for it, do it. But what people care about is, will you help them? Will you serve them? Are you a good producer? Is your product and service really good? Are you disruptive, innovative? Do you serve? Do you create great value? That's what people care about. And I actually find that when you do that and you're focused on that, the money is the outcome. Whereas if you're just focused on the money, people can sense it, and so it often doesn't happen. So yeah, hopefully that helps, John. Good question. Good question to have on a money podcast. And by the way, if you're listening to my podcast, make sure you follow me on my Facebook page, Rob More Progressive. Search me on Facebook because I do lives here, and then you can ask me questions on the lives. I can shout you out. So this was from John Gallagher. John has asked, what did it feel like when you became a millionaire? Honestly, it felt really good. And whilst it wasn't like, oh, wow, today I'm a millionaire, I feel amazingly better than I did yesterday, because you're not like a zero-er yesterday and a millionaire today. You one day do your... evaluate your net worth, maybe 6 months since you did it last. And last time you did it, you were worth 800,000, and now you're worth 1.1 million. So you don't become a millionaire in a day. You become a millionaire in a year or in 6 months, or when you do your next proper review. And I do remember doing my net worth review, my net worth statement. You should be doing your net worth statement every 6 months, you know, working out exactly your net worth, which is your net assets minus all your liabilities. And I remember thinking, this is freaking awesome. This is a goal. But for me, it wasn't, you know, like I was only worth a couple of hundred grand, 300 grand more than when I'd last done it, which was a good amount of money, but it wasn't huge. So what it was the score, i.e. I have become a millionaire. So I have hit a goal, a landmark, a benchmark. And that felt as good as the money. But also the money felt as good as the benchmark for those who say that money doesn't make you happy. So I find money tends to exaggerate everything. So if you're happy and you've got loads of money, it just makes you happier because you can do so many more cool things with your money. But if you're a slave to money, it can make you even worse because it can fuel addictions. So money tends to exaggerate traits you already have. So, you know, when people say money changes you, now it just tends to exaggerate the traits you already had. So it felt really good when I did it, but it wasn't like an overnight thing. And when I say it now, I still pinch myself. I became a millionaire between the age of 30 and 31, and I'm 41 years old. And there's still this weird sense of, oh, wow, am I really? Oh, yeah, I am. And it happened so long ago, and I went beyond 1 million, then 5 million, then you get to 10 million and whatever else. But yeah, I should enjoy that a bit more. I should feel good about that because, you know, there must be 0.001% of the population that are that. So that's a good thing. And by the way, the greatest gift of being a millionaire is freedom and choice, not just for yourself, but for others. What you can do for your children, what you can do for your staff, what you can do for your community, what you can do for your charity. And people forget all that. All right, cool. What else have we got here? What's been the biggest game changer for you becoming a millionaire? The biggest game changer. So, I mean, look, there are lots of things that people will say, things like security and freedom and choice. And they're definitely there. And you know, I had $600,000 worth of bills in the last few months, and I was able to pay them out of my current or savings accounts. And had I not been a multimillionaire, I wouldn't have been able to do that. So, you know, you can protect yourself against disruptions. You put your kids through, you know, a nice private school. So all of that is good. But I'll tell you the biggest game changer for me, and this is from Afrik, and that is the ability to launch something new, to dive into something exciting, and to take some risks and know I can do that. Because, well, look, you can do that when you've got nothing because you've got nothing to lose. But I know I've got security and finances and foundations behind me that if I want to launch a new product or service, or I need to invest in something, or I need to go and figure something out for a few months or whatever, I've the blimey, wow, that hiccup nearly sucked in the whole phone. I've got the ability to do that. And that's about time. So, you know, they say that poor people are spending, you know, a lot of their time trying to save money, and rich people are spending a lot of their money trying to save time. And I think the money gives you the ability to have flexibility and freedom to go into new things and have the time to do it and the time to test, and even the freedom to fail sometimes. And also, Afrik, what I've learned along the way, who I've become, and it's a cliche, but it's certainly true. And I know because I've got to this point. And that is, you could take my money away, but you can't take what I learned and who I became. And I think what you learn and who you become and the people you meet and the relationships you've got along the way that you pick up becoming a millionaire, that's way more valuable than the £1 million or the £5 million or the £10 million. Way more valuable. Because I'm going to make way more than £10 million in my next 5 years and 10 years and 15 years and 20 years. I might make another £100 million. I might make another billion. I might make 10 billion. Who knows? Because to be a net worth, you have to make more than it, because the net worth is what's left. So, yeah, hopefully that's useful for you. These are good questions. Thank you. Angie, you seem so incredibly busy. Do you get much relaxation and family time? I like to keep myself busy. So it's self-inflicted. It's not busy through reactive. It's busy through proactive. It's what I enjoy to do. And what I do is when I free up time, I fill it with more stuff. When I've written a book, I write another. When I've launched a podcast, I launch a second. When I've created a load of products and services, I do more. When we've got when we become the biggest property training company in the UK, I'm going to go overseas and do more. So what I have done is compartmentalize my diary and tweaked it, you know, maybe every 3 to 6 months to put key life areas and more family time in. I don't really relax and I'm not really bothered about relaxing. I'll watch a bit of Netflix. But I'm not, I don't know, I could relax, listen to an audiobook. I could relax watching an autobiographical or business documentary. So for me, I love what I do. I do what I love. So I don't really need to relax. I can kind of relax. I don't need to have 3 hours a day meditating or go on 1 week holiday every 4 weeks like some other people do. And you've got to know what you need to do to unwind. What I do though, or what I don't do, is I don't cluster, I don't ram my diary too full. I do have weeks and sometimes months where my diary's too full, but then we're like, wait, okay, put some space in. So I had 3 or 4 hours space this morning. I tend to do about 3 hours deep work a day, maybe four. Don't need to do 5 or 6 or 8 or 10. Would you start again from zero and see what you could make and how quick you could get there? Would I suppose if I was challenged enough and I felt that there was enough upside and there was enough reason for it, maybe. Yeah. Do I think I could do it? Yeah. Would I enjoy it? Yeah. Would that challenge me and make me a bit uncomfortable? Yeah. Do I think that I need that from time to time? Yeah. Do I think I've got skills and resourcefulness that I've built along the way that means I could hustle and sell and market and launch something? Yeah. Am I talking myself into this? Yeah. Do I need to do it? No. So are you going to pay me a load of money? Yeah. All right. Yeah, you can. I mean, James has said that you can take bigger risks and get bigger rewards, you know, when you're worth more money. Yeah, you can, but you have more to lose. And I discussed this with the billionaire Jim yesterday in that the first thing he said, I said, what does a billionaire know that a millionaire doesn't? He said, well, I'm not really sure, but we have a lot more responsibility and we have a lot to lose and we have a lot of staff and we have a lot of problems and a lot of worries, and people often don't realize that. So yes, you can take bigger risks and they're bigger rewards the more money you're worth, but you also have more to lose. And for me, I got this big, it dawned on me, this big sense that we're about 3 or 4 staff away from 100. And, you know, we've been at 80, 85-ish for a little while, but there's been a bit of a boost, and we're at something like, we're at 88 in Progressive, and then in Progressive Lets, we must be at about sort of anywhere between 7, 8, 9. So we're 5 off 100. And I've always loved hiring staff and loved growing, and I really love the responsibility of, you know, all the team and, you know, that we employ them and that, you know, they get their tax paid and they get their mortgage paid and they get the school fees paid and, you know, they get to do their things that they do because we employ them. But I got this immediate sense of, whoa, pressure, shit, that's a lot of people. And, you know, our overhead's approaching $1 million a month in cost. Just for 2 of our companies, and we've got quite a few. Our training companies, our 2 training companies. So like you hit $1 million a month overhead, you hit 100 staff, and you get these little moments where you're like, shit, you know, there's responsibility there. There's a lot to lose. If it goes wrong, I lose a lot. So there's that other side as well. And by the way, our billionaires have got even more than me of that. So you've got more resources, you've got more capacity, you've got more leverage, but you've got more downside as well. So, because there's never all upside without downside. All right, do I have a mentor? Yeah, I've definitely have had and have mentors along the way. Some billionaires, some 100 millionaires, some people who are really good at personal development, some very experienced business owners, some 60 or 70 year olds, some people who are great with mindset. I've got a therapist. I'm in masterminds. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm not just a, you know, like I don't just have one mentor, because I want to be mentored in different areas. So yeah, 100% I get mentors and I'm on masterminds. All right, cool. Well, this turned into a bit of an impromptu Q&A, which I hopefully you found useful and I enjoyed to do. Thanks for tuning in if you're listening to the Money Podcast. And remember, if you don't risk anything, you risk everything.